time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. I had an eventful week, and it started with a visit to Sharon and Lori's place over by Mackinon, and had a wonderful day with them, paddled around on the lake, and got to look at that beautiful, beautiful countryside where they are. Found a bog goldenrod, which I have not seen before. And it took me a while to key it out, but I stayed with it, and I was thrilled. It was the flower of this plant is very conical, very much bottle brush like, sort of tall and narrow, not at all like the common, the spreading tall and giant goldenrod, the Canada goldenrod. None of those, or those all have that plume of flowers at the top that just kind of, I like to think of, it explodes like Sideshow Bob's hair on The Simpsons. But this one looked a lot more like the gray goldenrod, which, by the way, should begin to bloom any day now. And the gray goldenrod is that one that also has this very narrow sort of conical-shaped flower head. But the gray goldenrod always looks a little bit like your index finger slightly bent, but very tightly flowered at the top. So watch for the gray goldenrod. And if you're lucky enough to have the bog goldenrod by your house, check it out too. It's pretty cool. Goldenrods are definitely getting going right now and are worth a look. Very quickly, if you come across a goldenrod and it has a gall on the stem, it's probably either tall goldenrod or giant goldenrod. And the difference is and I'll probably get this backwards, one of them is hairy, and I believe it is the giant goldenrod that has the hair on the outside of the gall, and the tall goldenrod is smooth. But it's been a few weeks since I looked that up, and I'm not positive about that. But there are lots of goldenrods. Another goldenrod, one that's pretty easy to identify, is the flat-topped goldenrod, also called the grass-leaved goldenrod, because the leaves on this goldenrod are really, really, really narrow, long and thin, and look a bit like a blade of grass. And the flower, flat-topped, most of the flower heads are sort of at the same height, and the flowers themselves are very small. All goldenrod flowers are small, but these are even smaller than the regular goldenrod. So really cool little flower and doing really well right now. Lots of them blooming. While you're looking at those, you're probably going to run into a plant called boneset or throughwort, which is a white flower, kind of fuzzy looking, sort of hairy, compact. It's a disc. There are multiple flowers at the top of this plant. What makes this plant easy to identify is if you see this white, fuzzy-looking flower, just look down the stem, and you will notice that the leaves appear to fuse together at the base. So they're opposite, and they appear to be glued together at the base of each leaf, and hence the name boneset. And probably in the 15th century, if you broke your leg, they probably would put this herb on your leg because, hey, if the plant can grow its leaves together, it certainly can grow your leg together. I'm not sure how that worked out for those guys. I think if you broke your leg in the 14th century, you were in for a long haul, and maybe you'd survive and maybe you wouldn't, but it wouldn't be much fun. I wouldn't want to have a broken leg 1415 or something like that. So the boneset and the goldenrods also out there at the same air in the same area. Goldenrods, they kind of grow on all sorts of terrain, but they oftentimes frequent these wetter spots, which is where you're likely to find the throughwort, the boneset. And while you're in there, you're going to maybe see the bright orange flowers of spotted touch-me-not. These are trumpet-shaped flowers. If you look at them, they have this long addendum at the back of the flower, which kind of forms like a fish hook. And the flower is uniquely adapted. It has a lot of special features. One, when it starts off male, and then as it continues to develop, the female parts of the flower will overtake. And so if you're a hummingbird, for example, and you come in there and you know that that nectar's way in the back around that corner, you sort of hover there with your beak stuck in the flower, and then you stick your tongue in and around that corner at the back to the bottom of the hook, and you get the nectar that's back there. Well, while you're doing that, the flower is gently going to lean down and put a little dab of pollen on your forehead. And when you go to the next spotted touch-me-not, if it is ready, it will accept the pollen. If it's at the female stage of its development, it will accept the pollen. And then you get a little green, looks like a little banana. It's going to be sometimes as long as 1 inch, but mostly 3/4, and kind of swollen. And if you touch it, it's going to explode. Its shell is formed of three distinct sections, and they are under tension. And once that tension is jostled, once the release is given, those three coverings, I can't think of what they might be called, the three parts of this seed pod roll up very quickly. And while they do that, the seeds go flying in every direction. So touch me not, that's the name. The flower also has this feature, which is kind of unique in that it creates a flower that never gets pollinated. It's a closed flower. The technical term would be clistogamous. And this flower is an exact replica of the genetics of the plant itself. So this flower is not cross-pollinated. This flower is simply a copy of the plant. And this is like covering its bets, because if this flower, if this spotted touch-me-not grows in an area where, let's say for one reason or another, the hummingbirds aren't there, and it doesn't get this cross-pollination, which creates the more robust plant, it will copy itself and throw those seeds out, because the plant is an annual, and the only way it can continue to grow is to reproduce from seeds each year. So spotted touch-me-not, bright orange flowers, big green seed pods. Go out and find some, take a kid with you and pop some of those, and I guarantee you the kids will be like, "Yeah, I got to have some more. I got to go more." So watch for the spotted touch-me-not. Very cool. Sow thistle is blooming. This is, if you're driving along this morning and you see these dandelions that are maybe 4 or 5 feet up in the air. And I use the term dandelion only in the fact that the flower is very similar to a dandelion. It's yellow and it's multiple flower heads up there at the top of this yellow flower. And that sow thistle, if you look at the leaves, they're sort of like thistles. And they have these little what appear to be prickers on the ends of the leaf lobes. But if you touch them, you'll find that they're, you know, as far as prickers go, they are pretty weak. So you can mess with the sow thistle and not expect to get paid back, like walking through a patch of Canada thistle or bull thistle or something like that. Few notes about some birds that are in the area. I still have rose-breasted grosbeaks coming to my feeder. The red-winged blackbirds have gone away. I don't know if they probably have gathered into flocks and they're probably moving about and feeding in big flocks, but they are not coming to my feeder. They spent the summer coming to the feeder every day, often male and female, and eating the seeds. But they have not been on my feeder for almost a week now. Hummingbirds, I'm going through a lot more hummingbird food than I used to. Lots of hummingbirds come in to drink, and so been actively feeding them. Probably a lot of juveniles in that crowd. And, of course, the little males who are so aggressive and so protective, Man, there's a quart of juice there. That male hummingbird couldn't drink all of that juice in a month. And yet, there he is, protecting it as though it's the last drop of sustenance on the planet. That sort of behavior served it well when it was before people arrived and started feeding them, but it's a habit that they really don't need to pursue anymore. Let's see, insects. Clouded sulfur butterfly, that was the yellow one with a black wing border. Lots of monarchs. I'm seeing plenty of monarchs around. The local population seems to have recovered. A lot of pictures on the internet on our Season Watch page of caterpillars and monarchs, adult monarchs. So monarchs seem to be doing okay. These are the group that will probably migrate down to Mexico, and that should happen near the end of this month and going into September. I have seen monarch butterflies as late as October, so there's always, you know, that one that didn't get the message. Morning cloak butterflies are out. These are the ones that will overwinter. The morning cloak is, you know, the size of a monarch. It's dark. I'm going to say dark brown, but when you see it, you're going to think black. And it has a cream-colored border around its wings and some blue spots if you get lucky and get close enough to see it closely. But the morning cloak butterfly is out and flying around right now. It will find a spot and hide out for the entire winter. And then it will be one of the first butterflies we will see in hopefully late March, but for sure in April next spring. And finally, on the butterfly scene, I was out and bouncing around in the woods, and I ran into five of these very light-colored butterflies that were very actively either in defensive territory or flirting with females. And I'm not sure which was which, but there was a lot of flying about where they were chasing one another, and I thought if I were driving, if I were riding on that butterfly, my head would be spinning. They were really, really after it. And this was a butterfly called the Appalachian-eyed brown. And it's a beautiful little butterfly, reminiscent. It looks a bit like the pearly eye, but it's lighter. My eye picks it up as being pale. And when I first saw it, I thought pearly eye. And then I thought, but the color isn't quite right. The pearly eye is darker. And so I took a bunch of pictures and finally got one that was sharp and clear, and went and checked it out. And sure enough, it was this Appalachian-eyed brown butterfly. Pretty cool. Insects, eastern pondhawks, yellow-legged meadowhawks, common whitetails, green darners, 12-spotted skimmers. Those are a list of all of the dragonflies I've been seeing. You have probably noticed, as I did, that the mosquitoes have rebounded. They are not yet anywhere near historic levels, but there are more mosquitoes now than there were for the first 3 months of summer. May, June, and July was almost, they were almost absent, and now all of a sudden there are enough around so that you'll notice them. Nothing like enough to drive me indoors, but, there's a few. I killed a few. Green frogs and gray tree frogs. You may have been listening during the phenology report from the students and heard about the thumbnail-sized green gray tree frogs. They're gray tree frogs. They can turn green when they need to, and they're coming out. They have just emerged from the water, and they are kind of hopping around on the leaves of the cattails, so check those out. I've seen my last fireflies, I believe. It was about a week ago that I noticed my last fireflies. Walking through the woods yesterday, I was intrigued by the sight of a lot of leaf miners. And I keep waiting for one to spell out a word or two on the leaf, and especially on the large-leafed asters. there's a leaf miner that that works on those. And a leaf miner is a tiny insect. The fly lays the egg. The insect, the pupa, the little worm, gets in between the layers of the leaf and eats out the inside. Imagine a peanut butter sandwich, and all you do is eat the peanut butter from between the two layers of bread. That's a bit overstated, but that's essentially what's happening with the leaf miners. And as I said, I keep waiting for them to spell me out a message like, take your leader to me, or something like that. Anyway, check out the leaf miners and enjoy their little designs that they're putting on the plants. As far as the berry season goes, we're running toward the end. Choke cherries are gone at my house. Choke berries are just getting ripe. Pagoda dogwoods are, as they ripen, they're being eaten. This past week, I told you a week ago that if you wanted hazelnuts, you better get after them. At my house, they went from plentiful to almost none in the last week. So the squirrels and the chipmunks and the deer and the bears, and I once saw a woodchuck up in a hazel brush. They are definitely after the hazelnuts, and they are taking care of them in quick order. Bur oak and red oak, both are freighted with acorns. It looks like a pretty good year for both of them. The bur oak, the white oak, is more preferred as a food source, but the red oak is certainly putting out a lot of acorns this year, and we'll see how that works out for them. Nanny berry is, the berries are still quite green, and I'll just have to watch and see what happens and see how they come along. And while I was stumbling around in the woods the other day, I came across baneberry, which is a bright red berry on a short bush. Baneberry, if you remember your Shakespeare, a bane is a curse. Don't eat them. Also, the mountain ash, the showy mountain ash, is the berries are starting to ripen on those. Most of the mountain ash you see in town, in people's yards, has a different phenology, and that is not the native tree that I look at. The one that I look at is Sorbus decora, and it is called the showy mountain ash, and it is native to Minnesota, grows in the wild. I have several on my property. They're not common, but if you're walking around and looking carefully, you'll run into some here and there. And finally, last note, the yellow birch in my yard have just begun to put out their next year's male flowers. The male catkins on the yellow birch are starting to develop, and you can kind of check those out if you've got a yellow birch in your yard. I looked at the paper birch, and I looked quite carefully with binoculars, and I did not see any. Now, that doesn't mean that they haven't done this same thing, but I haven't seen them yet. I will let you know when I do. That's the Phenology Show for this week. Thanks for tuning in. As always, if you have comments, observations, or things to share, I'd love to hear from you.